We really have to have that skilled examination to know, yes, they've got this pattern of dysfunction, they've got joint signs, they've got abnormal muscle function, and they've got perhaps decreased range of motions. You know, that thing that we see in people who've got a true condition, rather than these little isolated findings, or is it just that they're tender and painful, but they don't actually have a dysfunction?
Cervicogenic headache and dizziness can be quite complex when it presents in the clinic. So today we had Julia Treleaven from the University of Queensland. She's been studying this since 2000, and in 2004 she completed her PhD, and she focused on proprioception and sensorimotor control around the neck. Now, Julia's done a masterclass, which you can trial in the show notes for free for 7 days, where we go a fair bit deeper on this topic. But in this episode, there were so many wonderful pearls, including how to approach someone with ongoing cervicogenic headache and dizziness, and a slightly alternate approach that's not something I'd considered before. There were a lot of great insights in this one from Julia. Let's jump into it. My name is Michael Risk, and this is Physio Explained. Welcome, Julia. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
We're talking about cervicogenic headache, cervicogenic dizziness, and you've done a masterclass on this. So for the listeners who haven't tried, we're going to put a free trial in the show notes. But today we're going to go a little bit deeper on that topic. So Julia, for young health professionals listening, what's probably the first step in diagnosing if this is cervicogenic headache or dizziness versus potentially other factors?
Yeah, so I think it's putting everything together. So the patient interview, what they're sort of telling you. So are they telling you that the symptom, whether it's be dizziness or headache, is coming on with the neck pain? It's aggravated as the neck pain's being aggravated. It's better when the neck pain's better. It's aggravated by things that are fairly specific to the neck. And sometimes with dizziness, that's a little bit difficult. But, you know, certainly things like the usual things that will stir up a neck is being stirring up the dizziness or the headache. So that's from the patient interview. And then we really need that skilled examination to try and work out if there is a true cervical musculoskeletal condition, because we know from things like tension type headache and migraine that a lot of them report neck pain, but that can simply be referred pain as part of the headache. And similarly with dizziness, we see the same thing. A lot of people with dizziness report neck pain, so about 60% or so, and they could have a primary vestibular problem, but then they can get secondary neck problems from it as well. So we really have to have that skilled examination to know, yes, they've got this pattern of dysfunction, they've got joint signs, they've got abnormal muscle function, and they've got perhaps decreased range of motions. You know, that thing that we see in people who've got a true condition, rather than these little isolated findings, or is it just that they're tender and painful, but they don't actually have a dysfunction. So they're the two things. And then the other thing is really trying to work out, putting it all together, does what they're telling you and what you find, do they equal? So for example, if someone's reporting constant 9 out of 10 headache or constant 9 out of 10 dizziness, but you find very mild joint signs and a bit of reduced range of motion and, you know, maybe a, you know, little bit of impaired muscle function, they kind of don't add up. So really need to be able to sort of suggest that, yes, the amount of dysfunction in the neck seems to be equivalent to their reporting in terms of their symptoms. And then the other thing is really thinking about, it could be that it's a primary problem. So directly, yep, it's definitely causing it, and that's wonderful, and they are easy to treat. But then there could be the situation when you've had, for example, concussion or whiplash, where you might have a comorbid neck condition, but the headache or dizziness is coming from somewhere else. It could be secondary. So it could be, you know, when I was talking about those vestibular patients, where they're getting secondary neck issues, or even visual symptoms can reflect down and cause neck pain and stiffness. So it could be a secondary thing. So it's really working out, and then maybe in some of these headache forms, it could be that it's a trigger. So really working out what exactly is the role of the neck in these presentations.
That's really thorough. And I'm wondering, if I've got a neck in front of me and I'm a young health professional, do you feel like there is a common pattern for maybe 50 to 75% of these presentations, like they might have reduced range to one side, like the muscles on that side might feel a bit on, for lack of a better word, and potentially painful on palpation and joint MOBs? Are those kind of patterns going together when you see this?
Yeah, so it should be, for example, if it's a headache, if it's right-sided headache, then you should see joint signs in that right-sided upper cervical joints, C01, 1-2 or 2-3. You're feeling that there's local muscle spasm and that they're reporting pain. And then, you know, they probably have impaired general range of motion to that side and also poor muscle control. That might be upper cervical rotators or craniocervical flexors, that sort of thing.
And so if we were shifting towards, you've identified that and now we're thinking about treatment, because some of the treatment points you've put here off air, I actually found really interesting and I haven't thought of before. So you'd written here normalizing afferent input and the things to consider about that. So could you go over for our listeners, what is afferent input and how might we be normalizing that?
Yeah, so I guess that was more in relation to dizziness, but it could sort of relate to headache in a way as well, in that the dizziness is thought to be due to abnormal cervical afferent input. So the input coming from the muscle spindles is going up to the brain, and then that information goes in with the vestibular system and the visual system, and the brain is expecting that information to all sort of equal each other. And if it doesn't, then you can get this mismatch, and then that can cause the dizziness. So one of the things that we want to do is actually normalize that afferent input. So all the things that could cause it to be impaired, so things like pain, things like muscle function, things like fatigue in the muscles, things like range of motion alterations. So all of the things that we see in our patients with neck pain or with a musculoskeletal disorder, then potentially if we're addressing those things, then we're going to normalize that afferent input and potentially decrease the dizziness. So it might be that we're doing motor control exercises, we're doing our manual therapy, we're improving the fatigability of the muscles. And we know that just those things alone and just treating the neck in that way can improve dizziness without having to do anything else as well. But sometimes we need more.
This is fascinating because I know not much about this topic. So I think my questions hopefully are helpful for others. I was thinking about the chicken or the egg and correlation and causation. Are you leaning with your experience or research? Is it showing us that once people have neck pain and dizziness, those changes happen? Or is it that those things are happening and then that's what causes it? Or we don't know? Which way do you kind of lean there?
Yeah, no, I think it's those things are happening and then that causes the dizziness.
Okay, sure.
Yeah, if it's coming from the neck, and then treating the neck can help, but then you've also got this other layer where there's reflex connections between the vestibular system and the visual system and the neck, and then that information going up to the brain to be integrated and tuned. So in some patients, just treating the neck and normalizing the afferent input isn't enough. We've got to address higher up, and that's where the things like tailored sensory motor control training comes into it, where we're training balance, we're training cervical proprioception, joint position, movement sense, we're training eye movement and head eye and head movement control and coordination. So those things sort of work at that sort of second level where you're really trying to integrate the vestibular, visual and cervical afferent information so that the brain's sort of getting the right information and learning that, oh yeah, we're all getting along like a happy family now. So some patients need that. Not all, you know, so some you can just do your normal treatment and it will improve. But then others, definitely when you start adding that sensory motor stuff in, that makes a huge difference.
And so we would start with, I'll say, inverted commas, traditional therapies of soft tissue work, range restoration, strengthening around the neck, and that could help a lot of patients. Mm-hmm. And then if that's not working, we go to this second level, which is the sensory motor control. Could you go deeper on that?
Yeah, it depends on your patient, what they've had before and that sort of thing. Sometimes the sensory motor stuff is easier to add in straight away.
Okay.
They can do joint position error, balance training, head movement, eye movement control stuff. So it really does depend. But yes, if you're not familiar with it, then certainly you could start with the traditional stuff and then add the other stuff in.
Yeah.
So the sensory motor stuff would be things like adding in trunk head coordination, eye head coordination, but tailored to what the patient has wrong. So if they can't, for example, gaze stabilize and turn their head to the right, then that's what they would practice. If they had poor movement sense, then they would practice tracing their movement patterns with the laser. If they got dizzy when they're walking with large head movements, then that's what they practice. So it's really tailored to what they can't do, really.
This podcast is sponsored by Clinico. Clinico is a practice management software that helps you save time. It's used by 65,000 practitioners worldwide. With Clinico, you'll get everything you need to run a successful physio practice, like online booking tools, treatment notes, digital forms, customizable body charts, and much more. Physio Network members get 90 days for free now. Signing up takes 1 minute. Just visit clinico.com/physio-network.
Now, I have never heard of that. So go deeper for me there with you might notice something happening with their eyes and their gaze and that triggers their dizziness. So you would train into that. Could you give a few practical examples?
Yeah, so I guess doing an assessment for sensory motor control, and you don't have to necessarily cause dizziness, but you can see if they're impaired. So we look at things like balance. We look at eye-head coordination, so whether they're able to move their eyes independent of their head in all different directions. We look at joint position sense, which is the ability to bring the head back to the neutral position. We look at trunk head coordination, so being able to keep the head still while they move their trunk, which a lot of patients really have difficulty with. So seeing if they have any impairments in any of those across those different domains of sensory motor control, and things like smooth pursuit, you know, eye follow, but then putting them into a neck torsion position and seeing if their eye follow is worse in that position. So there's quite a few things that you can look at that helps us to identify sort of cervical related sensory motor control deficits.
Are there any objective tests or objective guidelines that you could say, this is the test we're going to do for that, and here's a range of scores? Is there something like that for this?
Yeah, there is. I mean, things like the joint position sense, we know that if it's more than 4.5 degrees, that's abnormal. With the smooth pursuit neck torsion test, there are things, but we've done research where clinically physios can qualitatively assess and see whether it changes or gets worse when they're in a torsion position compared to a neutral position. Movement sense, we use, you know, just tracing a target of a zigzag pattern, and we can count the number of errors of if they go outside of the lines and how long it takes. So there's a few things like that, and we talk about all in the masterclass of how to actually assess for those things. Try and keep it as clinical as possible.
And are you doing some of this work, I think you mentioned earlier, with a light or a laser pointer? And how is that set up?
Yep. So I just have a laser pointer on a headband on the head, and then that's projected onto a target, and the patient uses that to either do relocation practice or doing the tracing and that sort of thing. Other things, it's things like just doing, you know, gaze stability and just focusing and trying to turn your head and things like that. So it doesn't need a lot of equipment.
Yeah.
A lot of the time.
Yeah. And I've seen similar things with shoulder and shoulder position error. And what I've found or what I've seen is that tends to remedy quite quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Is that similar in the neck? What do you find?
Yeah, definitely. It does remedy quite quickly, especially if things are improving in general. But what can happen is if they have a relapse or they have an exacerbation of their pain, then, you know, they'll say, oh, it's gone off today. But then they'll quickly come back. It'll be much easier for them to improve it than, yeah. So it doesn't take very long at all for a lot of these sorts of things.
I like that there's some unique language there that you notice with these patients as well. So that's interesting.
Yeah.
With some of the gaze work and the joint position error, much like the traditional therapies we're talking about earlier, does that tend to, you're changing those symptoms and then that kind of fixes their pain and their headache? Do you find those two things go together?
Yeah, it can do. And we've just finished a study with some collaborators in Thailand where they looked at doing manual therapy and exercise and then adding different sensory motor elements. So they had another group that did manual therapy and exercise and balance, and then another group that did that and joint position error, and then another group that did all of it. And the interesting finding was that really to improve balance, you had to do balance exercises. To improve joint position error, you had to do joint position error exercises. But one of the interesting findings was that all of the groups improved in neck pain and disability, but the groups that did this, particularly the group that did all of it, all of the sensory motor stuff, their neck pain and disability improvement was more sustained over 12 months.
Wow.
So we're wondering whether it's important, particularly for recurrence, but these patients all did have some deficits in sensory motor control to be in the study. But yep. Certainly, you know, maybe if people do, then we might need to add in sensory motor to actually get a sustained improvement over time in neck pain and disability. And so that's a really interesting study. And I think that's giving us lots of good information about, you know, why we might need to be adding sensory motor, tailored sensory motor training. Because previously we thought, oh, well, you know, some people will get better, and they do, they all get better. But to sustain that improvement, perhaps we need to add those other things in as well.
That's a substantial finding. I'm feeling like that oftentimes that could go missed. I guess in your specialty and in your clinic, you might be seeing a lot of second opinions where that maybe that stuff hasn't even been done yet.
Yeah, absolutely. I see it a lot. I see it all the time because a lot of people have been there, done that, had lots of manual therapy, lots of exercise, and things have improved, but there's a missing element. And then as soon as you start adding the sensory motor control stuff in, that's like the key that really helps them to improve. So I did a case study actually a few years ago of a fellow who was a master's student, and he'd come out from Sweden and he'd had a bad skiing injury a few years prior. And so he had, you know, obviously done manual therapy and exercise to death, and he had improved a lot. But when he came to study and started doing all that sustained sitting, he started to develop headaches and dizziness, and all we did was sensory motor stuff, and it improved very quickly. Yeah, so that was the key for him.
I'm so glad we touched on that study at the end and then that kind of case example. That really kind of wraps it all up nicely. I had one more question around with these patients. What's the kind of timeline? Are you finding that this person had that for a year, they hadn't tried this stuff, and then once we implemented it, they get better quite quick? Or is it similar, like it could take another 6 to 12 months?
It depends. So usually it's quite quick. If it's something like whiplash, where there's a lot of other things going on, a lot of probably things that are continuing to perpetuate that abnormal afferent input, then it can take a bit longer. But certainly I've had lots of patients who it hasn't taken that long to get a significant improvement.
Yeah, wow. And I like that analogy. It's like the key or the last piece of the puzzle. Thank you so much, Julia. That was really well-rounded. And just a reminder for the viewers, if you haven't tried a masterclass, you can trial Julia's masterclass, which we'll put in the show notes. But thank you so much. A lot of really great pearls there. And I found it super valuable because a lot of this I haven't heard of before either. So thank you again, Julia.
Thanks for having me. And I hope that everyone, you know, have a go at it and just see how you go. It's a really interesting area.
Yeah, really interesting. Thank you so much.